At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Finally, an agreement. Well, at least in principle. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Portland, Oregon, I'm Rima Khreis, in for Kai Rizdal. It is Monday, May 29th. Good to have you along on this Memorial Day. So about that agreement. Over the weekend, President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy agreed to lift the debt ceiling for 2 years. But before we get ahead of ourselves, it'll, of course, still have to clear Congress. Marketplace's Justin Ho has been sifting through the deal, and he joins us now. Justin, let's start by talking about the basics here. What is in this thing?
So the headline is spending limits. So, you know, discretionary spending, this is non-defense spending, that'll be capped this year. And then the following year, the government will raise that cap by just 1%. And remember, inflation is a lot higher than that right now. So you could argue that a spending cap is effectively a spending cut in the short term. Even defense spending, which will go up by about 3%, that's also less than inflation.
I see. And there are also some specific spending restrictions in here, right? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, exactly. So, for instance, this deal would redirect some of the extra funding the IRS got last year, which was meant to help it crack down on tax fraud. This isn't all of the money, and the IRS could ask for more funding in the future. And the White House also says this shouldn't affect short-term tax collection. There's also some $30 billion worth of unspent COVID relief money the deal would claw back. That's for programs like small business loans and rural broadband.
Interesting. I know that the deal also contains some expanded work requirements for government benefits, which we have covered a lot on this show. Where did that end up?
Yeah, this is about the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP benefits. We used to call this food stamps. So those already come with work requirements, but this proposal would raise the age limit for those requirements from 49 eventually to 54. The deal does make some exceptions for veterans, people that are homeless, and young people that are aging out of foster care. And by the way, all these changes are temporary. They're scheduled to expire in 2030.
I see. And briefly, what is the deal with student loan payments? What's the latest there?
Yeah, so buried in this proposal is a line about student loan repayment. And remember, people that have federal student loans, they haven't had to make payments since early in the pandemic. And so this proposal officially says that 60 days after June 30th, like around September, people will have to start making those payments again.
I see. Okay, so what comes next exactly? Like, what is the next move? I know it has to go to Congress. What will we see?
Yeah, so Speaker McCarthy has scheduled a House vote for Wednesday, and the idea is to get it done there so the Senate has enough time to vote on it. And look, that time crunch is very real, because remember last Friday, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said if Congress doesn't raise the debt limit, then the U.S. will start defaulting on its debt on June 5th, which is literally a week from today.
That's so soon. Okay, so we are in a better place than we were last Friday, but it sounds like there's still some risk here.
Yeah, for sure. So President Biden and Speaker McCarthy are already working to try and convince their respective parties to just vote for this deal. And we are seeing some resistance. So some Republicans are upset that the deal leaves out a lot of cuts that they wanted. Democrats have criticized the deal, too, especially those expanded work requirements we talked about. And you could argue that this whole fight itself makes the U.S. riskier, regardless of what happens this week. You know, this actually, this came up in the debt ceiling fight back in 2011, because just like right now, the U.S. came really close to defaulting. And even after the government sorted it out, the ratings agency S&P downgraded the U.S. credit rating. And the argument was that all the political posturing makes the U.S. less stable and less predictable. And Rima, by the way, we still have that downgraded credit rating.
Great. It's great news. We'll see what happens. All right. That was Marketplace's Justin Ho. Thanks so much, Justin.
You're welcome.
Markets were closed today for the holiday, but the economy keeps on going. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. On Friday, we get the jobs report for May, and it includes a measure we talk about a lot on this show, the labor force participation rate, which is exactly what it sounds like, the percentage of the population that's working or looking for work. Back in April, it was 62.6%, still well below where it was before the pandemic. Generally, the more people in the labor force, the healthier the economy. But one challenge the U.S. faces is that the population is aging. Many who quit work may not come back. And so with that, some economists actually prefer to look at a different barometer. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports.
Olga Millman recently got full-time work at a community college in Lower Manhattan. Her duties include helping students meet their basic needs, like finding housing and food. She also does strategic planning.
We're doing fundraising. I'm planning a gala with a silent auction. So I love my job.
Millman is 52 years old and is included in the prime age employment to population ratio. That's the percentage of people in the U.S. between the ages of 25 and 54 who have jobs. It's currently 80.8%. That means 4 out of every 5 people in that age group is working.
It's among the highest it's been since the early 2000s.
Ryan Sweet is chief U.S. economist at Oxford Economics. He says this ratio is a good barometer of the overall health of the labor market, because it excludes younger people who are more likely to be in and out of school, as well as older people who may be retired. Instead,
these are people that need to be working and should be working.
Sweet says with employment as high as it is, some industries like hospitality and retail will continue to have a hard time finding workers unless they start paying way more.
That's why you're seeing a lot of automation. So, for example, we took our kids to a restaurant recently and they brought out an iPad. And you order on the iPad, one person brought out the food. So there's ways to automate and reduce the demand for some of these workers.
Back in Lower Manhattan, Olga Millman says she'll keep working well past prime age, partly because she doesn't have enough money to retire early. Also, she says her job gives her a purpose. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
If you're a young woman, say between the ages of 21 and 30, then I'd say there's a good chance you've seen the ads on social media, the ones that tell you that you can help a family in need by donating your eggs. Oh, and while you're at it, make thousands of dollars. Egg donation is a multi-billion dollar industry, and it's only growing. I host a Marketplace podcast called This is Uncomfortable, and I've spent weeks talking with young women about what it's like to donate, or really I should say sell, their eggs. One woman's story really stood out to me. Her name is Ashley Griffin. When Ashley was in college, she came across a bulletin board on campus with an ad about egg donation, and immediately she was intrigued.
21-year-old me felt so like eager and hopeful. And like this was maybe going to change everything. And on top of it, I'm doing a good thing that will make people happy.
Ashley grew up in a low-income household, and she was racking up student loans. By the time she graduated, she'd have $40,000 to pay off. So she filled out an application to donate her eggs. And it was extensive. They wanted to know everything from her eye color down to her SAT scores.
What was your childhood like? Tell me about the relationships with each of your siblings. What would you want to communicate to any future offspring?
Well, it sounds like in answering these questions, you're selling yourself.
100%.
When the clinic accepted her application, she said yes, no hesitation. And after the procedure, Ashley got her check, $8,000.
It was in my account before school started in September.
When you say that you got the check right away, I don't know why I'm imagining you like on the hospital bed and someone's like literally handing you a check.
Yes, that's what happened.
Really? You're like in a daze and they just like hand you a check?
Yes. Yes. I remember thinking, God, I hope I don't lose this.
That excitement was tempered when in the days following, Ashley started to experience some intense swelling and pain.
Every day, my abdomen was bigger. Like at one point, I couldn't see my toes. And by the end, like at the worst of it, I couldn't lay down because when I laid down, I felt like I was drowning.
Ashley experienced what's called ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. She was rushed to the ER where they gave her some pain meds. She recovered, but then she started asking herself questions about how this could have happened.
I remember it was so confusing going from being told, this is so rare, it never happens, to then, don't worry about it, this happens all the time.
Ashley began to do some research. She joined a Facebook group for egg donors where she learned that some people were making up to $50,000 for a single donation.
You get a vast range of compensation based on traits. So when it comes to egg donation, it really is a market in genetics with these eugenic overtones.
Diane Tober is a professor of medical anthropology at the University of Alabama. Tober says her studies show that white and Asian donors, on average, tend to get paid tens of thousands of dollars more than Black and Hispanic donors.
So there really is this global drive in this market and, you know, the wealthy paying more for the traits that they want.
In the past, industry guidelines capped donor compensation at $10,000. But that changed after a class action lawsuit in 2011 successfully argued that the guidelines were a form of price fixing. And with no federal regulations into how donors are compensated or treated, and very little research on the long-term health effects of selling your eggs, many donors figure out how to navigate the system by talking with each other, by joining Facebook groups like the one Ashley joined. After connecting with other donors, Ashley thought maybe she'd do it again, but this time she'd ask herself a question first.
If I don't want to do this, what is the amount of money that would change my mind? I'll set that as my number, and if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, and if it does, I get the money. And that was like a big mindset shift.
So what was that change your mind amount of money?
I decided if somebody paid me $15,000, I would do it.
Turns out someone was willing to pay that. And so Ashley donated again. And this time the procedure went smoothly. The money felt like an on-ramp into the financial stability she craved. Ashley would go on to donate a total of 6 times throughout her 20s to help pay her student debt and find stable housing. In total, she's sold at least 70 of her eggs. Most of the donations were done anonymously, but now with DNA testing kits, there's no guarantee she'll stay anonymous forever.
And I don't know how many kids there are, and I don't know, it's out of my hands, and that was like a choice that I made, but just feeling like the weight of that.
Is that something that you think about often?
Every day, yeah.
She feels grateful that she's been able to help families in need. But she's been thinking about it more lately as she and her partner, Ashley's queer, are thinking about building their family. Their plan was to use an anonymous sperm donor. But then Ashley started to do some research. She found another Facebook group, this one filled with donor-conceived adults, and they were sharing their experiences.
A lot of feelings of resentment for, like, their genetic parents who profited off of selling their gametes and describing feeling like babies on an assembly line.
Ashley started to worry. If she had a baby with an anonymous sperm donor, then that kid would have an unknown number of siblings from both sides of their genetic family. So she and her partner decided to not go with someone anonymous and instead use a donor they personally know. Ashley says she doesn't regret the choices she made in her 20s. They helped her avoid and alleviate financial crises. But if she's honest with herself, she hadn't quite grasped the weight of them.
Those decisions mean that there are human beings in the world who wouldn't be here otherwise. And, like, the fact of that is, like, beautiful and nauseating and overwhelming, like all of it.
Ashley can't predict whether the kids conceived using her eggs will eventually reach out or ever want a relationship with her. But she says right now she's focused on being more comfortable with herself and her decisions so that if those conversations do happen, she'll at least be ready for them. If you want to hear more personal stories about money, you can check out This Is Uncomfortable wherever you get your podcasts. We just started our 8th season. You should definitely check it out. Coming up.
I got a little sassy with the bartender.
Well, that can only end well. But first, let's do the numbers. U.S. stock and bond markets are, of course, closed today for the Memorial Day holiday. But airports are very much open, and they are busy. The latest figure from the Transportation Secretary Administration, TSA, show the holiday weekend kicked off with roughly 2,658,000 people passing through airport checkpoints on Friday. That's up more than 250,000 on the same day last year. It is also the highest number of airport travelers checked on any day since Thanksgiving 2019, back before the pandemic. In Europe, markets in Britain are closed for the spring bank holiday. France's CAC 40 and Germany's DAX are both down 0.2%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Rima Khreis. If you sign up for a financial product, you might not know exactly what you're getting yourself into, what that risk might look like. But what if you at least had a little more of an idea? What if there was some kind of warning, a caution sign, if you will? South Carolina Public Radio's Scott Morgan has that story.
Back in the day, companies could pretty much say whatever they wanted to sell a product. Take 1946, when you might have heard something like this on the radio.
Yes, according to this survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Try Camels yourself.
Actually, you might have heard commercials like that until 1965, when Congress demanded labels on cigarette packs, warning us that smoking might, you know, kill us. Today, warning labels are on all kinds of products that could be hazardous to our health. Except for
financial products.
Right. Or so says Dr. Osgar Inja, professor of finance at the University of South Carolina. Dr. Inja promotes the idea of putting warning labels on short-term financial products, things like payday and title loans, which he says can be harmful to a borrower's financial well-being.
The equivalent of FDA doesn't exist in financial products, right? There is no requirement that says, oh, here's a warning label, like for tobacco, this causes cancer. And there aren't the same type of requirements for financial products.
The Federal Truth in Lending Act does require lenders to disclose terms, things like interest rates or how much borrowers will end up paying back. But numbers and contract terms can be overwhelming and abstract for some people. So Dr. Inja thinks it might be time for high-interest lenders to put an impossible-to-miss label right there on the application.
That would have to say, warning, these products can cause you a financial loss and hardship. And I think that would work. I think that would probably have a fairly big impact on people's propensity to use these products.
His vision for a warning label is bold. Bright orange, a dollar sign in a bear trap, and big fat letters portending danger ahead.
If I saw this, I would turn back around.
Andrea Drummond is a widow in Greenville, South Carolina. A couple years ago, she turned to an auto title lender when she couldn't cover expenses and medical bills with her Social Security checks. And looking at Dr. Inja's warning label mock-up, Drummond says she wishes she had seen it before she put her car up as collateral and ended up buried in debt.
Because, I mean, with the warning sign like this, it's letting you know you're getting yourself deeper and deeper in debt.
And consumer advocates agree that a big bright label could make some borrowers think twice. Mike Litt is the consumer campaign director at the U.S. Public Interest Research Group.
It would send a clear message that this is a potentially dangerous product.
A decade ago, PIRG advocated putting a warning label on prepaid debit cards. But that idea never caught the attention of U.S. policymakers, and no official push for any kind of financial warning label has caught wind since. Ultimately, Litt suspects that a label, however eye-catching, wouldn't derail desperate borrowers.
A warning label does also sound to me a lot like a disclosure. And at the end of the day, a disclosure doesn't really do you any good if you can't afford to pay back the loan to begin with.
Carrie Smith agrees. She's the South Carolina Regional Director of Self-Help Federal Credit Union, and she did a little thought experiment. She showed the bear trap label to a few credit union members.
And asked them, would a warning label like this cause them pause?
And they said, yes, the label worked, as intended. But Smith also showed it to borrowers who, in the past, had turned to risky loans.
And when I asked them if these loans came with some type of warning label like this, do you believe this would have stopped you from taking out the loan?
Smith says they all said no. For borrowers without options, that kind of label wouldn't even cause a pause. In South Carolina, I'm Scott Morgan for Marketplace.
By now, you've probably heard of cat cafes. And if you haven't, please Google it and go to your nearest one right now. They are basically places where you can snuggle with cats while enjoying a cup of coffee. Well, it turns out dogs are feeling a little left out. And so now more places are cropping up for them, too. Except in this case, you bring your own pet and there's a lot more room to run around. In today's installment of our series, My Economy, a bar for both humans and dogs.
I'm Lindsay Lipovich. I own Bark Republic, a dog park bar in downtown West Palm Beach. Bark Republic came from an experience I had with my dog, Winnie. We had gone out, went to a brewery, and they wouldn't let my dog in. And I was floored. I thought, you know what? This place doesn't serve food. Why can't I bring my dog in here? And I got a little sassy with the bartender and said, you should get rid of all those metal containers and put down some turf and you'd have a cool place. It was about 10 years ago. It took about 7 years for me to convince my business partner that it's a good idea. And that's now we're here today. One of the biggest unexpected things since we opened was how much effort it would take to keep the place clean and sanitized. So our cleaning process is a two-step process. At night, we are power washing it with water and getting all the grime and stuff out of there that we possibly can. In the morning, we attack it with an enzyme cleaner as well. The cost of that enzyme cleaning solution I was talking about used to be around $15. I just ordered some yesterday and it was $25. I go through about 6 bottles of that a week, and they're gallon-sized bottles. The brewery side of our business is really unique. We source our beer from, we say, 90% local craft breweries. Unfortunately, the cost of bringing in some of those breweries has gone up. You know, when we first opened, it was like $80 for a slim of a craft beer. Now we're looking at, you know, $120 to $140 for some of the more obscure, more process-intensive beers. We had to adjust a lot of our membership packages and the fees associated with those. We decided shortly after the new year we were going to raise our monthly membership of $20 a month to $30 a month to help supplement. Winnie, she's like a child to me. I love her very much, and it used to be so disappointing to have to leave her at home when I would leave for work. But when she comes in to bark with me, I feel like I gave her some sort of purpose in her life a little bit. But just being able to have her with me, and I feel like she definitely has a sense of ownership around the place, it's pretty cool.
Lindsay Lipovich owns the aptly named bar, Bark Republic, over on West Palm Beach, Florida. You can tell us what's going on in your personal economy by going to marketplace.org/myeconomy. This final note on the way out today, we mentioned the jobs report coming out later this week, and on that note, I thought I'd share some stats that kind of surprised me. According to a survey from Deloitte, 46% of Gen Z currently hold either full or part-time jobs on top of their main employment. And for millennials, that number is 37%. If you compare that to last year, it is a 3% increase among Gen Z and a 4% increase among millennials. Gotta wonder how much of that has to do with inflation. All right, we gotta go, but first, your moment of economic context. If you enjoyed a barbecue during this holiday weekend, well, I hope you enjoyed it. But also, odds are you probably spent a bit more than you were hoping to. Saw an article in Axios that showed how barbecue staples are more expensive, thanks to, of course, inflation. For example, a Memorial Day basket of a few cookout essentials was up nearly 9%. Meanwhile, a bottle of ketchup saw the biggest increase at nearly 28%, followed by mustard, which went up 13%. But if you ask me, I don't know, do you really need the mustard on your hot dog? I know, no one asked for my food takes, but just saying. All right, and on that note, I am out of here. Our daily production team includes Livy Burdett, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Nicholas Guillong, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, and Sean McHenry. And I'm Rima Jerez. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.